Okay, our recording has started, so I'll turn things over to Mike then.
Well, thanks, Paul, and good to talk with some of you, the folks that I really know and who probably could be sitting in my chair and doing this as well or better than me are Al up in Minnesota and Randy in Wyoming and Paul, of course, Rick down in Texas, and Bob, he's not with us today, in Colorado. So I know all of you pretty well. And I want to thank the National AgriAbility folks for asking me to join your project as a member of your advisory committee. I kind of inherited this position because I'm taking over the authorship of Dr. Val Farmer's columns in various agricultural publications. And he has big shoes to fill, and it's going to be an interesting experience. I think I'm going to learn a lot. I'm already getting some interesting calls and emails. I had my first one from a conspiracy theorist who said, you need to write a column and write continuously on Agenda 21. And, you know, they're going to take over the world if we let them. And I had no idea what that was about. So I looked it up, and sounds like Agenda 21 is an effort within the UN that started in the mid-90s to propose sharing information about conservation of world resources like trees and water and so forth. It doesn't look like the agenda has gotten a lot of traction, but if you read the information about it, it sounds like you know, there is an effort by a few people to coordinate control or management, I guess I would say, in a loose sense, of all of the world's resources. So I can see how somebody might get alarmed by that. But I've had some good suggestions, too, from folks that are saying, hey, you know, we need to, would you consider doing something like this, including some people that are interested in trying to bring single people together who have interest in farming or ranching and may have both those unique interests, but also sometimes that brings with it a set of, let's say, restrictions on who you might end up with as a partner. So it's been a learning experience so far, and I haven't even published a column yet. But I will have my first column this weekend. At least I think it's going to be my first, and because Val said goodbye last column, so we'll see. I might be coming to you for some ideas and things. I was going to actually consider writing one on the AgriAbility project, but you probably saw that Val wrote, I thought, a really nice piece about the National AgriAbility project and all of the, you know, affiliates with the AgriAbility project.
And by the way, I think we are moving toward having those columns by Mike on our national website, so hopefully those will be coming up soon.
Yeah. Am I hearing an echo, or is that just me?
Yeah, it is now. Somebody just logged in, and when that happened, I don't know why the echo started, but did somebody just join us?
This is Ellen again. I just joined because I had it on speakerphone, and then I took it off and got disconnected.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know why we're getting that echo. Somebody else come on just a second ago, too?
Bruce Schweitzer. I can't stay too long, but I want to join for a while.
Are you on speakerphone?
Nope.
We're getting a lot of echo for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Let me try going
I hear it, too.
Speakerphone again.
One thing that has worked for us at AgriWellness is when you're not speaking to press the mute button. I don't know if that helps or not.
And which button is that?
Well, most telephones have a mute button, and then it lights up when it's on, and if you speak, you can't be heard. But we've got this delay, but
Yeah, I'm not sure what the situation is. Ellen, would you possibly try hanging up and then trying again and see if that affects things?
Sure.
Sorry about the problem. Now, let's see. How are we doing there?
It's gone.
Sorry, Ellen. Have to bar Ellen from participation. Well, let's maybe she'll have an alternative phone or something she can use. So, okay.
I would guess that if she uses the mute button, she should be okay.
Okay.
Well, it's an honor to be asked to join the AgriVility work. I have some background in the work. It goes clear back to, and we're getting the echo again, but I'm just going to keep on going unless somebody says it's too bothersome.
Ellen, unless you have another phone or something you could try, it sounds like it's a problem with your line or something, so sorry about that.
The project, you know, in a certain sense kind of grew out of the farm crisis of the 1980s. There was a lot of sympathy for doing something to make farming, let's say, a safer and more sustainable endeavor. And among the various, let's say, accomplishments that came out of the farm crisis legislatively was money to start national centers for agricultural safety and health. And eventually these became regional, and they covered all areas of the United States. I would say a counterpart effort began in Canada almost simultaneously. The National AgriVility Project was something that was talked about at a meeting in Des Moines in about 1988 or so. There was testimony gathered from people all across the country who were alarmed about the farm crisis and what can we do to make farming safer. And one of the proposals was to create a rehabilitative project, which Senator Tom Harkin certainly, well, he got behind it and was instrumental in its founding. Do all of you see it the same way, or do you have different thoughts about the initial founding? I just wanted to present that just so you know that my interest goes back a long ways, but have I left anything important out of this, or am I inaccurate in anything?
I think that's definitely part of the whole process. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you don't hear anything, I assume that I'm going to keep on going here until you say, hey, Mike, you're wrong about this. I guess I think that AgriVility has done an awful lot to reduce, let's say, worries and stigma about behavioral health, as well as to assist people with recuperating from injuries and illnesses that may have taken a toll on people, not just their bodies, but also relationships, psychological functioning. All parts of us were, you know, holistic beings. There has been some, I think, real accomplishments that come from the suffering and turmoil that occurs when we do have serious injuries. They put us in a vulnerable place that makes us, I think, more open to talking about our real selves and our real concerns than what we might normally experience or be willing to share. But when you're vulnerable after you've been put in a hospital and you're trying to figure out, are they going to save the leg or not, or, you know, I'm so sorry that this has happened. I wish it would have never happened. How come I let this occur to me? And, you know, you have all those thoughts. And they vary for every person, although there's still also some similarities. But that vulnerability, I think, has helped to open up people to talk about their doubts, their behavioral health, and maybe even to some extent the things that have contributed to the incidents that led to some type of impairment or changes in one's life. Sometimes those things that have led to those events may involve misuse of a substance. Sometimes it's what we call dumb things, where we've been in too much of a hurry and haven't stayed focused, or we haven't had enough sleep. It's a whole range of things. So the Agribility Project is kind of in a unique position to capitalize on our work, I'll say, because I'm now part of this project in an advisory capacity, and it's where my heart is. I think this work has some implications for farm people who maybe have not had to experience these compromises and vulnerabilities. And it's kind of a good thing. There's a good side to being injured that we don't often consider, and that is that injuries give us an opportunity to make ourselves better. I often think of them as nudges to take a look at what are we doing wrong? How come this happened? What can I learn from this? How can I offer this up as an opportunity to make myself a better person for those around me who need me? What can I do to advance the understanding of why this happened so that other people might benefit from it? Now, changing course almost entirely. We know that about 30 to 50% of agricultural visits to physicians are for the care of behavioral health matters. When I say physician, I mean either MDs or DOs, but also physician assistants, nurse practitioners. So a lot of the work that medical caregivers in rural areas provide is to be counselors and good listeners, but it brings to mind the extent of behavioral issues and their contribution to the, let's say, the activity of farming and to the injuries and illnesses that can accompany farming and that Agribility might deal with. The use of the term behavioral is one that I strongly encourage, and I'd like to go into the history just a bit. The first uses of the terms behavioral health began in the 1980s, and it began with the development of a profession called behavioral health counselors. And so there were some programs that were beginning to think about behavioral health counseling. At that time, you know, it was psychology, psychiatry, social work. There was certainly nursing that focused on psychiatric issues. But there was no common adoption of the term behavioral. Its popularity as a term grew more and more, and I would say that the big shift took place in Moose, Wyoming, which is a little village in part near Jackson Hole, that occurred in May of 2005. During that meeting, there was some discussion about why should we use the term behavioral as opposed to mental. And I helped initiate a little bit of that discussion, having no idea that it would go in the direction that it did. There were people from the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration there. Rick Peterson, you were there, I know. I'm not sure if any of the rest of you were there. You may have been, and if I don't remember, I'll blame it on the fact that I only had one good eye at the time. And that's true because my retina on my right eye detached on the way out to Moose. And by the time I got into Salt Lake City, I had lost about 75% of the vision in my right eye because I was having that curtain effect. It felt like a curtain was coming down over my eye as the retina was just flopping down. By the time I got to Moose, I had only about 10% vision at the very lower end of my eye. And instead of that making it harder, it made me focus in my talk. And I challenged the federal government to drop the term mental because it wasn't doing any good. Farm people in particular are skeptical about mental health treatments, scared to talk about it. It's a term that is mystical and frightening. You don't hear somebody ever being called, oh, he's behavioral, but we would say, not we, but maybe some people we know might say, oh, he's just mental today or something that derogatory. The other things about behavioral versus mental that I think are important are that mental health treatments imply a level of expertise that we don't have ourselves. We have to go to somebody else for mental health treatments, a psychiatrist who prescribes medications or another prescriber who can give us medications to help overcome depression or anxiety or to sleep or whatever. Or we go to a trained therapist who is going to help us change ourselves through psychotherapy. The responsibility for the outcome rests heavily with the caregiver, the physician or the therapist, rather than with the person. I don't like the word patient, but client, or let's just say the individual who's seeking assistance, the consumer. The term behavioral implies that we are in charge. That is, all of us behave. Behavior is something within our control to a great extent. As farm people, we can't control the weather or market prices, but we have a lot of control over how we manage ourselves, whether we put ourselves in positions where we don't rest adequately or take inappropriate risks. Behaviors are things that we can talk about that don't scare us. It changes our role as caregivers because we aren't the skilled practitioners who are going to do something to cure the problem. Instead, we become coaches and educators who help the consumers to manage themselves better. Our role is to impart or help teach the skills that people can acquire to make themselves better people and to behave, let's say, in a fashion that overcomes the problems that led them to seek outside assistance. There's one other quality about the term behavioral versus mental that I also like, and that is that it's holistic. It implies that many people can have an impact on our lives, not just the physician, but the pastor, the outreach worker, the agribility provider, the neighbors, the extension personnel who may be providing education or visits. Any activity that modifies behaviors is part of behavioral health. So this matter of behavioral versus mental, while it got its start at that meeting in Moose, shortly after that, a National Rural Behavioral Health Task Force was convened in September that year and began conferring by telephone conference calls. There was a meeting in Washington, D.C. Well, there were actually two that I recall. The task force involved input from almost every major group in the country that had something to do with the provision of psychological services or psychiatric services or mental health or whatever you want to call it. But it brought together representatives of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. USDA was there. The National Association for Rural Mental Health. There were people from every walk of life, maybe about 30 folks. And in that meeting, there was a very intense discussion about the pros and cons of behavioral versus mental. By the end of the second face-to-face meeting, there was a pretty strong adoption by almost all of the people on the task force. On April 6 of 2006, out came a memo, an email from the National Rural Behavioral Health Task Force that said that SAMHSA is considering adoption of the term behavioral health as opposed to mental health. And shortly after that, the website showed the adoption of the term behavioral. So, and then I got an email, kind of a expression of joy almost, from one of the facilitators of that task force meeting that said, "Once again, rural comes to lead the way." And it was exciting to see that, but it was a step in the direction that it needed to go. And since then, most federal agencies have adopted the term behavioral health rather than mental health, except for some traditional branches of government like the National Institute of Mental Health. It's unlikely that they will change. It also tends to be a psychiatry-dominated area of government. But you do see behavioral health adopted by most of the agencies of the Department of Health and Human Services, certainly the Office of Rural Health Policy, SAMHSA. You see it in the Veterans Administration. It's pervaded just about everything. Most centers that provide care, community mental health centers, some of them are now changing their names to Community Behavioral Health Center. It implies a whole range of services that focus on addictions as well as our behaviors. It can focus on whatever makes us better people through the modification of behavior. So I just wanted to throw that out to see what you thought of that and just kind of see where this goes. So I'll quit talking here and ask for your thoughts.
Well, I'll speak to that lead person. This is Roberta Schweitzer. I hear the rationale for that. However, when you stop and think about it, a lot of medical illnesses, physical illnesses, are also behaviorally driven. So there's a lot of behaviors that you have to do there as well to assure that you remain healthy after chronic illness. And so, I don't know, it's almost like another term that will confuse more people almost, you know, in a different way. Because let me tell you, a lot of, like I said, a lot of case management, care management, now is focused specifically on those behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
That's my initial reaction to it. So we should call everything maybe behavioral health, and then it would be actually clear the responsibility of the person that's involved. I don't know.
Well, you raise an interesting point, maybe some of the others of you have some reactions and thoughts. I want to formulate a little more yet.
Well, I guess from our perspective at the national project, we haven't spent, you know, a lot of time discussing this or debating this, and it may be something good to bring up at our advisory team meeting, but I think just the name of this group kind of reflects our state, you know, of discussion, in that we call it mental / behavioral health. And I think part of the reason is we want to, you know, we want to be open to the ideas you presented in terms of the importance of, you know, behavioral and the term, and yet we don't want to lose people who might not understand that term. I guess we want to, we're not sure what, I guess, the recognition by the public, you know, the general public would be in terms of how would they perceive, what do they perceive behavioral health to mean. And so I guess that's why we've kept the mental health, you know, tag on that, just so that, again, people that are used to that and are looking for that would not be confused by not seeing that. I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to say.
I can react to that. I think that using the term mental / behavioral is certainly inclusive, and it invites people who still feel more comfortable with the term mental. But you introduce the term behavioral as a also a way of thinking, so you're not trying to exclude at all. I think it's a good inclusive way of doing things. The term behavioral in general has been winning its way gradually into more and more acceptance, just because people are more willing to talk about themselves, and they, if you talk about mental health treatments, a lot of people will clam up, especially agricultural people, and they won't clam up when they say, when they start talking about, you know, how's your, you know, I can't even think of a good way of saying it, but I know that people tell me that they prefer the term behavioral now when I see them in the office.
Mm-hmm. If I had one more thought, this is Roberta again. It's interesting because in light of the new movement that, you know, it started around the country this last couple of years with the mental health first aid, that's going to be in conflict somehow, I think, or kind of, you know, it spreads it out again. So what I've done, I've actually gone through a whole group now of mental health first aid with a group of individuals, and they're mostly rural folks, they are all. And what we found there is the use of mental health in talking about health. The more we educated and they understood what that meant, the less stigmatized it felt to them. So by the end of the class, their feedback showed that they were able to understand and figure out how to intervene if they needed to get somebody's support. So we talk in terms of physical, like, you know, Red Cross first aid. We talk of mental health now, first aid. And so in that way, by educating and helping people understand, it seems like that there's less fear or stigma, just from my small groups I've done so far. So that's my experience to this day. But, you know, I don't know, that's not a big sample.
The term first aid has really come into vogue more and more out of the disaster services and disaster response work. The term psychological first aid is almost synonymous with mental health first aid or mental health first aid. Sometimes you'll see it, behavioral health first aid, but when you look at the disaster plans for the states, they now are using the term disaster behavioral health plan rather than disaster mental health plan. So it's an example of how the thinking has begun to focus nationally in another area where the term behavioral has made some inroads. But I think it really, the point that you were making that makes so much sense is that the more we educate people, the more we talk about it, the more we reduce that stigma and fear that this is something we don't understand. And that's the point I think you're trying to make.
Yeah, I think that's the key for me, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Just make it clear and reasonable to people and not something scary and frightening.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave now, but I'm glad to talk. Glad to hear you talk.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Mike, can you speak to, this is Al Rasmussen, can you speak to specifics of behavioral health related to agriculture?
The term agricultural behavioral health has begun to be adopted in several different realms. There is a course that is called Agricultural Medicine, Occupational Services for, I'm trying to think of the right term. The course is, for short, is just called Agricultural Medicine. It is now offered at about a dozen places around the country. In North Carolina, it's coordinated through East Carolina Medical School. Vermont has a project where they teach this course. It's a 40-hour course designed to prepare people who are working with the agricultural population. Agribility is part of the course. The initial effort at developing the course was started at the University of Iowa, and a grant came out about 2003 to take this course nationwide and to develop teams of teachers who can offer the course in their region, and after 1 or 2 years, the University of Iowa team can back away from being the main presenters, and the experts in all of the areas that are covered are done through local personnel. The topics that the course covers includes such things as general overview of what are the risk factors for farm and ranch people, zoonotic illnesses, that is illnesses that can be contracted by both animals and humans, swine flu being an example, brucellosis would be another. Other topics, dermatological conditions, other cancers, oncological issues, cardiovascular health, musculoskeletal health. That includes things like redundant motion problems. There's sections on how to set up an AgriSafe clinic. There's a presentation always about agribility. Behavioral health is one of the core subjects. There's about a dozen core areas, C-O-R-E is what I mean, you know, just the fundamental subjects that are covered in the course. So besides North Carolina, Vermont, Iowa, Wisconsin, North Dakota does it, the University of Nebraska Medical Center. It's possibly going to be offered in the future in Colorado, possibly in Utah and southern Idaho. It needs to be done on the West Coast in 2 or 3 places because there's a lot of agricultural activities there. It's planned to be offered in Louisiana and Florida. So it's starting to catch on. There are 3 textbooks out. All 3 textbooks include a behavioral health section, and the term behavioral health is kind of been adopted in that training. So that's kind of what I know about it, Al.
Mike,
Thanks, Mike. Can you
say again, our agribility projects are involved with this in their state that has one of these at their med schools?
Yes. Agribility is mentioned in each of these states as to how to access it. Usually the presentation has been 45 minutes to an hour out of that 40 hours of training. But it's pretty commonly covered in all of these areas. Now, the Vermont course is not just for Vermonters. It's also for the Northeast. So you get people from the New York project that have been participating and other sections of New England. In that original offering, I have been doing the behavioral health portion for quite some time now. I always look at the program and I see agribility is typically mentioned in all of the, let's say, the outlines of the courses.
And just as a side note, the newest project we've got, North Carolina Agribility, is formally partnering with the East Carolina University College of Health Sciences, so they may be more directly involved with this type of course and have more familiarity with it than a lot of the rest of us do.
Yeah, I did the North Carolina section on behavioral health a couple times, and I know that the Agribility Project in the region there was part of it. And they had folks from South Carolina attend as well. So it's, you know, the role of agribility is recognized as part of agricultural medicine preparation. And this course is not just for physicians. It also is for nurses who are going to manage AgriSafe clinics where they do health screenings and make personal protective equipment available. It's also a course for veterinarians, for people getting their master's or PhDs in public health, or there's one place now, it happens to be University of Iowa, where you can get a master's or a PhD, or you can get a certificate in agricultural occupational safety and health. And there are a couple of students who are getting that PhD degree with their entire concentration on agricultural safety and health. So, you know, this whole work is, I think it's having, it's already had a significant impact and it's going to continue.
Other thoughts and questions people have on any of the topics we've touched on?
Go ahead. I was just going to say that I attended the Vermont Agricultural Health and Safety training, and it was great. There were a lot of people there who were really interested in the health of farmers, the overall health of farmers, and we talked a lot about the kind of the behavioral health effects of various agricultural injuries and how that might affect farmers, and people were really into it, and it was a great training, and I would definitely recommend it to anybody.
Is that Tina?
Yep, that's Tina.
Where did they actually hold that, Tina, and how long did it last?
It was a really intense training, just to warrant, because it's, you know, 40 plus hours, and they try to squeeze it in basically as few days as possible. And so it was in Fairlie, Vermont, which is F-A-I-R-L-E-E. A beautiful location, right on the lake. It had a nice walking trail. And I think it was put on mostly by the Vermont Health Task Force. And they did a really great job organizing the whole thing and bringing in outside speakers, you know, from Iowa and I forget the other states, but.
I participated in the first training that was done in Vermont. Ellen, which one did you go to?
I went to the one that was just last year, just last fall.
Okay, yeah. So the person who was doing the behavioral health section, I think, was from the Northeast now and has taken over the behavioral health portion.
I don't think I can remember where they're from, but also the chapter that's in the textbook, which is called Agricultural Medicine, Occupational and Environmental Health for the, what does it say? For the health professions. Anyway, the chapter in there specifically regarding psychological health of farmers is also really interesting and really worth reading. And I have scanned it into my computer so that I could print it out for folks at a meeting for the National Alliance for Mental Illness here in Maine. So if anybody wants that chapter, I think I can probably distribute it to you since you're all nonprofits and stuff.
I really applaud that textbook because it nicely goes into the history of agribility, but also there's a whole section that, as you're saying, Ellen, it focuses on the agribility work and how to access it and so forth. The second revision, it'd be the first revision, but a second version of that textbook is getting underway fairly soon. And I've been asked to write the behavioral health chapter, so we'll see.
Oh, well, good.
By the way, anybody that's interested can go to agrisafe.org and under their training and resources, you can find out where the 2012 trainings are being held.
You bring up a couple of really good thoughts, and that is that course, I think, is excellent preparation for people who are, let's say, employees of state agribility projects.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful introduction to the broader picture of agricultural medicine, and it would be well worthwhile to send a staff member or volunteer or whatever the capacity that people are involved in your state projects. Think about doing that. And if you contact the sponsor who is offering the agricultural medicine course, there are some limited scholarships that you can apply for. So if cost is a factor, sometimes you can get some financial assistance. And I might say that there are a few pharmacists, a few veterinarians, and occasionally a few professionals in the various behavioral health professions that come to that as well.
Somebody else have a comment? I think I cut somebody off there a second ago.
This is Ellen, and I was just going to ask Tina if she could relate kind of the breakdown of the people who took that course. I know you're going into medicine now, Tina, but what was your feeling? Were they basically professionals, from the medical fields, or was it a smattering of people from a number of different occupations?
That's a good question. There were it was mostly people of the health profession. We had a DO. There was somebody who's a homeopathic doctor. Which I thought was pretty neat. There were also some behavioral health people there. Actually, I think two counselors, maybe actually three counselors who were there. A veterinarian was there. A lot of nurses and doctors actually were there. So it was definitely a wide range of people that were there. And it was more heavily populated with health professions people, which was great because, obviously there are a lot of health concerns that are specific to farmers, physical and behavioral. So that pretty much sums it up, I think, on who was there. And then there were most of the Vermont agribility people were there. So.
I think I called you Ellen before, sorry.
It's okay. There are two of us from Maine, so.
Oh, okay.
That are here, so yeah.
I'll catch on eventually if Paul sends out the list of participants and has your state, then it should only take me about 5 or 6 times to get you all down.
Yeah.
By the way, I am planning to come to the meeting in Indianapolis next month.
Correct.
So maybe we'll see some of you there too.
Yeah, that's an advisory team meeting. Usually the state projects don't necessarily attend that, but we do have you also scheduled for our all-staff call, so that'll be a good opportunity for you to be able to share. That's April 19th, and there should be normally there's about 40 to 50 staff members on that where we can you can share about your work. And one question I had in terms of what you were doing with agri-wellness, and what did you see any strategies particularly that you found were effective in communicating or overcoming, I guess, this kind of stigma or any barriers like that? That we talked about the importance of education and, you know, continuing to get the message out, but were there any particular techniques or strategies that you thought were particularly effective that you ran across in your work out there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Agri-wellness is currently struggling without adequate funding, and the nonprofit work is still going on, but there's no paid staff at the moment. So I am, whatever I do for agri-wellness is gratis, and the same with everybody else who's on the board. It is a 7-state network that includes Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, and Iowa. When the money was there, the first, all 7 states had their own hotlines, websites, and most of them operated all days of the year and all 24 hours. That feature of having a hotline where you have staff who answer the phone and who know something about agriculture, that was critical for the success of the hotline. So you had to have people like in Kansas, Charlie Griffin and his staff. You had to have the Iowa Concern Hotline with folks that are experienced in working on farm issues. All of them know about agribility to some extent. We started off first using the term mental health back in the late 1990s, like 1999, when things first got started through the Office of Rural Health in Wisconsin. When agri-wellness became the administrative entity that operated or assisted the 7 states in 2001, there was some discussion about the term behavioral health. And I would say that by about 2004, the term behavioral health was adopted mainly because the telephone responders found that the people who called the hotline, sometimes they would shudder a bit when the word mental came up. That didn't always happen, because a lot of them, they called because they wanted what they said. Well, I need to talk about some mental health issues. But the term behavioral probably began to be more in vogue, and it's won a fairly wide acceptance through the, let's just say, the developing of a habit to begin using the term behavioral. And that habit, we found, was a good one for people to acquire. So that's kind of been our experience. If there's anything that we really need now, it is one or more funding streams so that this kind of service can be kept alive and even expanded. And who knows whether that is something that can be accomplished in our current political climate.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there's a greater tendency for people to use a hotline than there would be for them to, you know, contact a behavioral health provider and, you know,
yep,
go in? Is there an element of anonymity that maybe is a benefit there, or do you think there's another factor that's involved in that?
The element of anonymity is important. It's as important almost as having confidentiality. Confidentiality is critical, but also having somebody answer who knows something about the issues that rural and agricultural people experience. So you have to be culturally geared toward this population. And all of those features are critical. The other thing that happened in the 7 states is that all of them were able to offer follow-up counseling so that from 1 to 5 sessions could be provided by a person who was an approved provider. At our peak, we had some 475 trained providers who were experienced in working with agricultural people. So that background was really critical.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point about that kind of cultural competency, because we had a grad student that was doing his research mostly on ergonomic issues and
mm-hmm.
assistive technology, but he indicated that the biggest factor that the people he interviewed related to in regard to their openness to talk about any of these issues was whether or not they were talking to another farmer or not, you know, somebody
yep.
that they perceived as having credibility in that area. And I think it seems like it would apply, like what you said, in the mental behavioral health issues, too. That would be, I think, I could see how that would be important.
Yeah. Now, at the busiest years, maybe 2008 and 2009, when the dairy industry was starting to struggle, for about a 2.5-year period there, we averaged 22,000 calls to the hotlines or helplines, and then another 5,000 or 6,000 visits to the websites in a year's time. So you can see that, you know, a lot of people were accessing this service. We think we need to convince USDA that they should continue to offer this kind of assistance, because it provided a way for people to learn about where do I go for a specific kind of help that I might need. And some of the calls that would come in would be for, my husband lost his hand, or, you know, it might involve injuries. And so it served as a way to connect callers with resources that might assist them, as well as to talk about the specific issues that, well, you know, they varied from person to person, but a lot of them, the main reason that they called the hotline was for interpersonal concerns, usually about my family's falling apart, what's going on, my husband doesn't treat me like he used to, and he doesn't talk. The second main reason why people would call was too much stress, financial problems. The third reason was depression. And then substance abuse occurred in about 40% of all calls to the hotline, some form of substance misuse. Often it wasn't the main problem, but it was a contributing problem.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. My name is Omaira, and I am in the county of Yuba in California.
Oh.
And I'm an outreach worker. I have 5 counties. And I would like to know what is the hotline number, or where can I go in as a website so I can help my farmers? I have workers that have been injured and they are stressed out. And, of course, we don't have these courses close to me to see. And I work for the Employment Development Department, so I don't know if they even will pay for me to go. But I need to be getting some kind of information how to talk to them, because it's like I am in the front line.
Yeah. That's a very good question, and boy, I feel for you on, because there is no hotline in California for farm people. Whenever that question comes up, the best that I have found that I can offer is to advise people to look for their publicly funded mental health or behavioral health service in the program.
Mm-hmm.
Look for the community mental health service in the phone book, and
mm-hmm.
then find out if they have someone on the staff who has enough of a background in farming or whatever the agricultural activity is, that at least if you have a name you can recommend to a person who needs,
mm-hmm.
Let's say, assistance with too much stress, you can say, well, here's the name of somebody that I know has a background about farming who is part of the Tulare County Community Mental Health Program. That's how I have to answer it, because we don't have a statewide hotline out there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're about the end of our hour, and we don't want to keep everybody hanging on, but if there are any other questions, we'd be glad to take them now, but if not...
Paul, can you hang on the line for just a minute? If I want to just visit with you about one thing.
Sure.
This is Julie, and I have to go. You did a really great job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Almeida, again, is there a way that I can get any books, or I have to be going through medicine or any other career other than being an outreach worker that I can get any other information for myself?
I would advise you to check out the Agra Wellness website.
Okay.
And it's AGRIWELLNESS.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some publications there that are about, you know, providing behavioral health supports for farm people.
Okay.
And I'll respond to any email that you send and see what I can do to maybe provide a little more, let's say, a type of response that is suited for your particular need.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It. Thank you. Have a good day.
Were there others that joined the call late that didn't have a chance to announce themselves that I can write down? Anybody?
Good talking to you again, Mike.
Thank you, Rick. You be good now.
This is Al.
Oh, Al, okay. Thanks.
That's all right. Hope to cross paths one of these days.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, well, thanks for everybody. Everybody for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll have the recording available.
Great.
I'd like to listen to it again.